Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
We are tonight going to talk about something I've discussed before in some detail, and that is why people are so compliant with everything that's happening. No one in today's world can possibly plead ignorance that they don't know what's going to come up in the near future affecting them all. Back with more after these messages. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and we're cutting through the matrix, talking about how people obey authority. This is to follow up on a previous one I've done. And in the previous one I mentioned a movie made in Germany a couple of years ago, available in the Americas and Europe. And it's called The Experiment. It's about how an experiment was set up in the university by a psychological department, and they selected volunteers who were paid for 2 or 3 weeks. And out of the volunteers, they halved some of them into prisoners, half into prison guards, put them in a mock prison, and observed how people become the roles they play. They become Mr. Uniform, they become Mr. Sadist, or they become the groveling prisoner. And this was based on reality studies, studies which had already been done. So you could try and get the movie if you can, it's well worth seeing. It's very factual. They follow the events that have happened each time this experiment has been done by those in control in different countries. And I say in control because these top professors are generally recruited and work for the CIA, MI6, and so on. The whole idea that the elite must understand why we behave so well when we're told to, what makes us tick, and how quickly we'll adapt to new situations in a predictable, and that's the word, is predictable fashion. So I'm going to talk about the original experiment that was done. It was Stanford Prison Experiment. It says here was a psychological study of human responses to captivity and its behavioral effects on both authorities and inmates in prison. The experiment was conducted in 1971 by a team of researchers led by psychologist Philip Zimbardo at Stanford University. Undergraduate volunteers played the roles of both guards and prisoners, living in a mock prison in the basement of the Stanford Psychology Building. Prisoners and guards rapidly adapted to the roles, stepping beyond the boundaries of what had been predicted and leading to dangerous and psychologically damaging situations. One third of the guards were judged to have exhibited genuine sadistic tendencies, while many prisoners were emotionally traumatized and two had to be removed from the experiment early. Finally, Zimbardo, alarmed at increasingly abusive antisocial behavior from his subjects, terminated the entire experiment early. Ethical concerns surrounding the famous experiment often draw comparisons to the Milgram experiment, which was conducted in 1961 at Yale University by Stanley Milgram, Zimbardo's former college friend. So there's your connection between the two. The only connection that they won't admit to is the CIA. But that's who was behind this. Tom Peters and Robert H. Waterman Jr. wrote in 1981 that the Milgram experiment in the 1960s and the later Zimbardo experiment were frightening in their implications about the danger which lurks in the darker side of human nature. The goals and the methods of the experiment. Zimbardo and his team intended to test the hypothesis that prison guards and convicts were self-selecting of a certain disposition that would naturally lead to poor conditions. Participants were recruited via a newspaper ad offered $15 a day to participate in a 2-week prison simulation. Of the 75 respondents, Zimbardo and his team selected the 24 males whom they deemed to be the most psychologically stable and healthy. So here they are doing a psychology test to get the most psychologically stable and healthy. These participants were predominantly white and middle class. The prison itself was in the basement of Stanford's Jordan Hall, which had been converted into a mock jail. Mike Schenck, an undergraduate research assistant, was a warden in Zimbardo, the superintendent. Zimbardo set up a number of specific conditions on the participants which he hoped would promote disorientation, depersonalization, and de-individuation. Very, very important. Now remember, this is a microcosm of what can be done on an entire continent, in fact, an entire world. Now remember, this is a microcosm of what can be done on an entire continent, in fact, an entire world. Now remember, this is a microcosm of what can be done on an entire continent, in fact, an entire world, if need be. Disorientation is very important. That can happen with crisis creation, real or imaginary, as long as you believe it. If it becomes hysterical, disorientated from their daily routine, and then that's followed by depersonalization as a mass movement. You have to move there, en masse, move here, etc. Do what you're told, you lose your ability to function and reason for yourself as an individual. And de-individuation, you start to break down all the compartments that keep you together as a complete being. Guards were given wooden batons and a khaki military-style uniform that they had chosen at a local military surplus store. They were also given mirrored sunglasses to prevent eye contact. It's eye contact, again, is to dehumanize any contact between the two beings, the two humans. Unlike the prisoners, the guards were to work in shifts and return home during off hours, though many times they would later volunteer for added duty without additional pay. Very telling that those who became the guards would volunteer for extra time without pay. That's how quickly people bond into their roles and a little fraternity. Prisoners were to wear only intentionally ill-fitting muslin smocks without underwear and rubber thong sandals, which Zimbardo said would force them to adopt unfamiliar body postures and discomfort in order to further their sense of disorientation. They were referred to by assigned numbers instead of name. These numbers were sewn onto their uniforms, and prisoners were required to wear tight-fitting nylon pantyhose caps to simulate shaven heads similar to those of military basic training. Very interesting. You see, they use a lot of these techniques in the military. In addition, they wore a small chain around their ankles as a constant reminder of their imprisonment and oppression. The day before the experiment, guards attended a brief orientation meeting but were given no formal guidelines other than no physical violence was permitted. They were told it was their responsibility to run the prison and they could do so in any way they wished. Zimbardo provided the following statements to the guards in the briefing. You can create in the prisoners feelings of boredom, a sense of fear to some degree. You can create a notion of arbitrariness, that their life is totally controlled by us, by the system. You, me, and they'll have no privacy. Very interesting to make people believe their life really had no meaning. They're totally controlled by the system and those in authority. We're going to take away their individuality in various ways. In general, what all this leads to is a sense of powerlessness. That is, in this situation, we'll have all the power, and they'll have none. And this was also in a Stanford prison study video, quoted in Haslam and Reicher. It's a book, 2003. The participants who had been chosen to play the part of prisoners were told simply to wait in their homes to be called on the day the experiment began. Without any warning, they were charged with armed robbery and arrested by the real Palo Alto Police Department, who cooperated in part of the experiment. The prisoners were put through a full booking procedure by the police, including fingerprinting, having mugshots taken, and information regarding their Miranda rights. They were then transported to the prison, where they were strip-searched, deloused, and given their new identities. The experiment quickly grew out of hand. Prisoners suffered and accepted sadistic and humiliating treatment from the guards. The higher level of stress progressively led them from rebellion to inhibition. By experiment's end, many showed severe emotional disturbances. After a relatively uneventful first day, a riot broke out On the second day, the guards volunteered to work extra hours and worked together to break the prison revolt, attacking the prisoners with fire extinguishers without supervision from the research staff. So they become innovative. That's part of it, is they adapt to their roles. Prisoner accounts initially devised for the prisoners to learn their identity numbers degenerated to long hour-long ordeals where guards tormented the prisoners and imposed physical punishments, including long bouts of forced exercise. The prison became dirty and inhospitable. Bathroom rights became privileges. That, again, is very important. Every big thing becomes a privilege, which could be and frequently were denied. Some prisoners were forced to clean toilets with bare hands. Mattresses were removed from the bad cell block, and the prisoners forced to sleep naked on the concrete floor. Moreover, prisoners endured forced nudity and even sexual humiliation. Zimbardo cited his own absorption in the experiment he guided and in which he actively participated as prison superintendent. On the fourth day, he and the guards reacted to an escape rumor by attempting to move the entire experiment to a real, unused cell block at the local police station because it was more secure. The police department refused, citing insurance liability concerns. Zimbardo recalls his anger and disgust with the lack of cooperation between his and the police's jails. As experiment proceeded, several guards became progressively sadistic. Experimenters said approximately one-third of the guards exhibited genuine sadistic tendencies. Interestingly, most of the guards were upset when the experiment concluded early. Isn't that interesting, too? Zimbardo argued that the prisoners' participants had internalized their roles based on the fact that some had stated that they would accept parole even with the attached condition of forfeiting all of their experiment participation pay. Yet when their parole applications were denied, none of the prisoners participated in it, quit the experiment. Back with more after these messages. I'm Alan Watt, back with Cutting Through the Matrix, and continue with this little article on an experiment, one of many done across the world, along the same lines, to find out how people fall into roles quickly, and how they obey orders, and how they become dehumanized in the process, and how sadistic tendencies appear. But even talking about the prisoners, those who had volunteered, remember, this was a voluntary thing for this particular experiment, when their own parole and their ability to get out and leave the experiment was given to them, none of them took it, even though the conditions were worsening in the experiment itself. So they bonded in the role of the prisoners. Mrs. Zimbardo argued they had no reason for continued participation in the experiment after having lost all monetary compensation, yet they did, because they had internalized the prisoner identity. So this victim again, you see. They thought themselves prisoners, hence they stayed. A replacement prisoner was introduced, prisoner number 416, horrified at the guard's treatment of the other prisoners, went on a hunger strike in an attempt to force his release. Instead, he was forced into a small closet for 3 hours of solitary confinement, while forced to hold the meal he refused to eat. The other prisoners perceived, this is an interesting part too, the other prisoners perceived prisoner 416 as a troublemaker. To exploit this feeling, the guards offered the prisoners a choice. Either prisoners could give up their blankets or number 416 would be kept in overnight solitary confinement. All but one of the prisoners chose to keep his blanket. So here's how they can even divide amongst the people who are getting a hard time of it, divide and conquer, because within that little statement there is part of the Delphi technique. So he's a prisoner who goes on hunger strike to force his release, and the other prisoners see him as a troublemaker. That's what happens at these meetings when someone with pertinent questions stands up to ask them. The do-gooders in the front row will hush them down and say, be quiet, you're disturbing this meeting. Let the nice man or woman talk. That's how it works. We're very predictable. Zimbardo concluded the experiment early when Christina Maslach, a graduate student he was then dating and later married, must be quite the sadistic, masochistic relationship, objected. to the appalling conditions of the prison after she was introduced to the experiment to conduct interviews. Zimbardo noted that of more than 50 outside persons who had seen the prison, Maslach was the only one who questioned its morality. Interesting again, you see the onlookers who are unaffected, they saw passers-by without question. After only 6 days, for a planned 2-week duration, 6 days all this happened in. That's how quick dynamics occur in these experiments. The Stanford prison experiment was shut down. Conclusions. The Stanford experiment ended on August the 20th, 1971. 6 days after it began, instead of the 14 it was supposed to have lasted. The experiment's result has been argued to demonstrate the impressionability and obedience of people when provided with a legitimizing ideology and social and institutional support. Now, the reason I'm reading this for you is to let you know what's coming with all of these military and paramilitary organizations, these with internal armies that have been built up around the world to be let loose on the public in the not-so-distant future. So they're given an ideology and their social institutional support. That's what backs these guys in the uniforms, the black ninja outfits. And they're given the backing of authority. We've already been through the experiments of the shocks that were administered in experiments. This is just another aspect of it. In psychology, the results of the experiment are said to support situational attributions of behavior rather than dispositional attribution. In other words, it seemed the situation caused the participants' behavior rather than anything inherent in their individual personalities. In this way, it is compatible with results of the also famous Milgram experiment, in which ordinary people fulfilled orders to administer what appeared to be damaging electric shocks to confederate of the experimenter. Shortly after the study had been completed, there were bloody revolts at both the San Quentin and at Attica prison facilities, and Zimbardo reported his findings on the experiment to the U.S. House Committee on the Judiciary. His criticism of the experiment was widely criticized as being unethical. Well, that doesn't matter, does it? And bordering on unscientific. Current ethical standards of psychology would not permit such a study to be conducted today. What a lie. What a lie, because our whole school system has been conducted with psychological conditioning and Pavlovian-style indoctrination. Goes on to say the study would violate the American Psychological Associate Ethics Code, the Canadian Code for Conduct for Research Involving Humans. I guess that's where you're getting sprayed like bugs all the time. And the Belmont Report. Critics, including Eric Fromm, challenged how readily the results of the experiment could be generalized. Fromm specifically writes about how the personality of an individual doesn't affect behavior when imprisoned during historical examples from the Nazi concentration camps. This runs counter to the study's conclusion that the prison situation itself controls the individual's behavior. I'll be back with more after these messages. Hi folks, Alan Watt back, cutting through the matrix. Just going over some of the experiments. Many experiments are going on all the time and have been your whole life. Put out by the big boys for what's to come, because it's all to do with what's to come. They don't do these little experiments just to pass the time. They want to know how people tick. And especially, they want to know how we'll all behave during this big worldwide crisis creation period. As they step up the crisis, real or imaginary, they want us to behave in a predictable fashion. They also want to know that the training that they're giving all of their multi-leveled troops and paramilitary organizations, how they'll behave in those situations. They must also behave as predictable, and they must be innovative too, meaning they're going to be sadistic towards the public. But it goes even further, because it also affects bureaucracies, these faceless people, the ones who take your number. They never meet you, your number assigned to them, and they tick you off this list and onto that list, and so on and so on. And they say that that's why the whole Nazi regime was so efficient when it came to eliminating people in large numbers, They're very efficient with numbers, but it's because people become faceless. You're just numbers on pages to them. You're not really human. But another aspect of the dehumanization of the guards and the prisoners and the cops that will be facing up to the general public, it's also because these people themselves tend to go into these jobs, the ones who actually go in for a career, and the sadistic part is already there. They like to see people cringe. It's an animalistic thing with some of these people, and you give off a fear which they get off on. It gives them their jollies. And with authority that they've been given, when you look at all the laws that have been passed, remember what I said earlier, when backed by authority, they go to the full extreme. And out comes their sadistic tendencies. Many, many, many kinds of experiments have been done on the public, mainly through the big funded, well-funded universities, funded by, look at the names of the associations that fund them. And believe you me, the CIA and MI6, a finger in every pie. That's where the data goes back to. Because what happens on the microcosm will work on the macrocosm, the whole world. And we must be predictable for total control. You can find more of this on Wikipedia and other sources, other books put out on these experiments, rather boring books by psychology departments. I've read from some of them in the past. And for those who can hold their minds together past a single sentence or a phrase, wade through them and you'll be astounded at the conclusions you'll come to.
Those who want to buy the books and discs I have at cuttingthroughmatrix.com, look up the website. Take notes of all the official sites I have there, and you can get the books and discs there. And you can also donate. It tells you where to donate to as well, how to do it. For myself, Alan Watt, it's good night. May your God or your gods go with you.